Okay. We're on Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. We're by the first two dots. It's nine lines down from the top. So we said in the Mishnah a few days ago, the Mishnah said, Aval Hazavu Valkeri Eina Metamin. The Mishnah contrasted a woman becoming a Nida, where we said that she becomes a Nida even if the blood hasn't physically left her body yet, as opposed to a man becoming a Zavon HaValkeri, the Ziva or the Shech Bazer has to leave his body. So what's the source for that? So the Gemara says, Zav Dichsev Ki Yihya Zav Mi Bisaro, Ad Sheyata Zovo Mi Bisaro. So the Ziva has to actually leave the body. Valkeri Dichsev Ishki Seitzev Yonu Shech Bazer. So and similarly, when it comes to a Valkeri, the Pasuk says that it has to be Teitze. No, meaning. You might have argued that before it comes out of the body, just like by the nida, right? Once it hits the base achitzon, right? Once there's a certain point in the body where it leaves, right? Yeah, I know. We'll see. We're gonna talk more about this. We'll talk more about it. Okay. So then we said in the Mishnah also, we said Haya ochel b'truma v'hirgish, right? The Mishnah said, let's say a Kohen is eating truma and he realizes that he's about to have an emission. So the Mishnah said that he should grab onto his penis, swallow the truma, and then let go. So the Gemara, this is actually a Gemara that we quoted back at Daf Yud Gimel. The Gemara asks, Ochez v'hasanya Rabbi Eliezer Omer kol ochez ba'amu mashtin ki'ilu mevi ma'bala'ola. Basically, if you cause yourself to have an emission because you're grabbing or because you're grabbing onto the penis, so it's as if you brought a mabul to the world, right? So the Gemara says, how is this permissible? So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye. In other words, you're using a thick cloth. So a thick cloth is not going to cause you to have an emission. Rava Amar, no, afilu tema b'matlas raka. You can even be using a thin cloth. Kevon de akar akar. Once the shikfa zera, the ziva is already out of your body, so there's nothing you can do about it anymore. So at that point, you can already grab on with a soft cloth. So the Gemara explains, v'abaye chayesh dilma ase lo sufe. The issue here is that Abaye is concerned that maybe even more shechva zera is going to come out if you use a thin cloth. Rava apparently was not concerned for that. So the Gemara says, really, is that really true? Hasanya lemaze domeh lenosid etzba ba'ayin shekolz man she'etzba ba'ayin medamas v'chozeresu medamas. The Gemara wants to give a parable to illustrate this halacha. It says if you put your finger in your eye will continuously tear up. So presumably, if you grab onto the penis, even after the initial Shech Vazera comes out, it's going to continue to flow. So how can Rava not be concerned there's going to be more Shech Vazera? So the Gemara says, no. V'Rava, kol achmume v'hadar achmume m'shaita lo shchiyach. It's highly unlikely that once your body is already emitting Shech Vazera, then it's going to continuously emit Shech Vazera. That's just not the way the body works biologically. In other words, in the same time span.
If I eat a piece of ham,
yeah.
Does it matter if I'm eating a kazayin or I'm eating this? It's the same, right? I assume it's all part of the same.
Yeah.
It's not quantifiable. It's not more of an aveira.
No. That's not... I sort of understand what you're saying. Yeah. It's not, again, everyone agrees that multiple emissions is an issue. The only question here is right. The issue here is, in other words, you have two factors here. One is the emission. The other is the fact that you have to swallow truma before you become tamei, right? So the Mishnah is trying to come up with a solution to that problem. So grabbing onto the penis, swallowing the truma, and then letting go seems to be the viable option. The reason is because at least the Gemara seems to be assuming that it's not going to cause another emission. The Gemara was bothered by that, but what about the example from the case of the eye tearing up? So Rava says, yeah, because biologically the two things are different, right? In the case of ham, so you know you eat a kazayas, you eat 25 pieces. I mean, it's the same avera, it's just a question of how many, you know, maybe how many chiyuvei malchus you're going to get. But here the issue is the emission going to happen at all? Right, that's a little bit different. And again, because you have to swallow the truma b'tahara, we have to come up with a solution.
I think the issue here was that the fact that they're trying to contrast the blood in the vaginal canal is the same thing as food in your mouth.
Food in your mouth? What is it?
Because what's the difference if the food's in your mouth or you swallowed it? I would think.
You're saying. At what point?
What I thought the issue. I thought they were contrasting. They're the same, just like. Blood in the vaginal canal is considered like you're a tummy already. So, like food in your mouth is also considered like you still haven't truma yet. So, only until it goes down in your stomach is it considered.
So the contrast that we mentioned in the Mishnah between a woman and a zav and a valkeri is in terms of at what point do each of them become tummy? Right? We said that for the woman, she becomes tummy even before the blood physically leaves her body. But for the man, the emission has to actually leave the body. That was the contrast. In terms of this halakha, in terms of swallowing truma. truma. So whenever you think the person becomes tame, you want to make sure the truma is swallowed before that point. That's the issue. Right?
Why is it good enough that it's in your mouth?
No, meaning, because it's still it hasn't gone down yet. Meaning, once the truma has already gone down your throat, then you swallowed it. That's what the Mishnah said. Initially, you swallow the truma and then you let go. Okay, so now the Gemara continues. Amar Shmuel, kol shechva zera she'in kol gufo margishba ina metama. So Shmuel says, if a person has an emission, but he doesn't sense that the emission even happened, it doesn't qualify as an emission. And again, we're going to talk about this in a different context later on. We'll see in a second. So we'll hopefully talk about this in a couple of weeks, but the concept of hargasha actually plays a big role in Hilchos Nida in general, which I think we mentioned this in the beginning of the Masechta, that a lot of the practical applications of Hilchos Nida don't start until about Daf Nun Zayin, which is always at the end of the Masechta, but the concept of hargasha also applies Nida Oraisa for a woman, meaning Nida Oraisa, the Torah says that in order for a woman to become a Nida, she needs to have a sensation that she's bleeding. If she doesn't feel the blood, then Nida Oraisa, she's not Tamea. Now, for a lot of reasons, we don't practically, that doesn't play a role, but that concept applies here as well. The Gemara says that if you don't feel the Shechva Zera coming out, if it just happened, so then that's not going to make you tummy. My time, Shechva Zera Amarakamana Beru'uyo LaHazria. The Torah refers to as Shechva Zera, so it has to have the ability to be Mazria. It has to have the ability to fertilize an egg. It has to have the ability to actually theoretically produce a child, which apparently it cannot do unless there was a sensation when it was coming out. So asks the Gemara Meisvei, Haya Maharher Balayla V'Amaru Matza Besaro Chai. This is a Mishnah Meseches Mikvos. The Mishnah Mikvos says, say a person had sexual thoughts at night, he wakes up in the morning and he finds that his skin is hot, so the Mishnah says, you have to assume the guy is tummy, even though he didn't actually feel a sensation, right? But the assumption is that, well, he probably had an emission. So don't you see that having an emission, even without a sensation, makes you tummy? Says the Gemara, no. Tir Gemara Rav Huna, b'mishamish mitaso b'chalomo, d'i'efshar l'shamish below hargasha. Rav Huna says, the case in that Mishnah Mikvos is talking about a person who had relations in his dream. And as a result, the Gemara says it's impossible for a person to have relations, even in their dream, without a sensation, meaning that a sensation took place, even though you might not have been aware of it taking place. So that's good enough.
Sensation.
What was that?
An unconscious sensation.
Yeah, exactly. So therefore, Rav Huna says that's the case. So in other words, the Gemara says, you're right. You really do need a sensation in order to become Tameh. You don't necessarily need to know that the sensation happened, but it needs to have happened.
Lishna, yeah. An interesting fact here that the Shechvat Zera has to be capable of producing.
We're gonna get to that right now. We're gonna do that right now. That's the next part of the way. Yeah.
But how can any Shechvat Zera that didn't come in?
Well, what's that? What?
An infert person is not metameh.
I don't think no. I think I mean that the way it comes out has to be in a way that in theory could potentially impregnate. We'll see in the next line of the Gemara right now. Lishna Acharina Amar Shmuel Kol Shechva Zera She'enu Yora Kachitz Ena Metamer. This is exactly what we just said, that if it doesn't shoot like an arrow, meaning it doesn't come out the way that it does during the act of relations in a way where it can theoretically impregnate a woman. So according to this version, it's not metame. So the Gemara asks Ma Ika Ben Hailishna Hailishna, meaning both versions of the Gemara, whether you say that it doesn't impregnate or it doesn't shoot like an arrow, they both seem to be saying the same thing. So what's the difference between these two versions? Says the Gemara, Ika Benayu, Nekra Bahargasha, Vyatza Shalom Bahargasha. A nafkamina would be if the Shechva Zera actually was uprooted, but in other words, but didn't actually leave the body, if that happened with a sensation, but when it actually left the body, there was no accompanying sensation. So according to the first version of the Gemara, it's just about being uprooted. So that would still make you tummy. But according to the second version, that it's about shooting like an arrow, it's about actually coming out of the body. So if there was no accompanying sensation, then you would not be tummy. And the Gemara continues, Nosa Dipshita Leila Shmuel, Mibaya Leila Rava. That which was obvious to Shmuel, namely that which we just said a second ago, that this question about whether the Shechva Zera was uprooted or actually came out, was actually a question to Rava. Dibai Rava, Nekra Bahargasha Viyatzda Shalom Bahargasha Bahu. Rava wanted to know, what would the halacha be in a case where the Shechva Zera was uprooted with a sensation, meaning it was on its way out, but when it actually left the body, there was no accompanying sensation. What would the din be in such a case? So the Gemara tries to answer. Tashma, Balkari Shetaval, Velo Hitel Mayim. So imagine a person's a Balkari, a guy had an emission, right? Then he goes to the mikvah, but he did not urinate before going to the mikvah. Now when he comes out of the mikvah, he urinates. So the assumption is, L'cheshayatil Mayim Tami. When he urinates, he's going to be Tami, because presumably there is some Shechva Zera still mixed in with the urine. And the Gemara says, so don't you see from here that you don't need a sensation? You don't need a Hargasha to become Tami, because obviously the guy doesn't feel the Shechva Zera coming out. He's just urinating. day, and yet we're still declaring him tameh. Says the Gemara, no, that's not a good raya. Shiny hosam, deruba bahargasha nafak, the majority of the shechva zera already came out previously with a hargasha, with a sensation, so the fact that a minority of it is coming out now without a sensation doesn't make a difference, and therefore he's tameh. Lishna acharina, he's tameh. In other words, he's not tameh because of the shechva zera, the little bit that's coming out now without a sensation. He's tameh because of the majority that came out beforehand.
But he went with, to the mitzvah.
Right, okay. but because there's still a little bit of shechva zera in his body, in other words, the hargasha goes back to the fact that he had it beforehand. But because there's physically still some shechva zera in his body.
What you're saying here is after somebody. He's better wait till he urinates before.
Correct.
He goes to the
exactly. Exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Then the Gemara says Lishna Acharina Amrila. Another version of the Gemara. Amar Shmuel Kol Shechva Zera.
Same pipe. The urine and the. It's two different things.
No.
Where else does it?
It's made two different places, but comes out of the same.
Comes
hole.
Out of the same. Yeah. Where else does it come out from?
It's like a fork, and then it comes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Biologically, women have two.
Yeah.
Men have one.
Yeah, that was the whole machlokes we had earlier. The Gemara, yeah. But with women, with Shnei Mayanos or Mayanecha, that was a different issue. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar Shmuel.
Biologically,
okay. Theoretically. Not touching that issue. So Amar Shmuel, Kol Shechva Zera She'edo Yorah Kachetz Eina Mazra. So this version of the Gemara is slightly different. This version says that if a man's Shechva Zera doesn't shoot like an arrow, then it doesn't impregnate a woman. So the Gemara says, okay, Azruehu de lo mizara hatamui betamya. So the implication is, yes, it won't impregnate, but it will make a man tame, which is not what we said before. And what's the source for that shit? Amar Pasuk says, ki hiya v'cha ish asher lo hiya tahor mikere. Right, that means that if a person was basically had a mishnah, and he became tame, afilu keri ba'olam, the Gemara has a drasha, any sort of keri, whether you sensed it, whether you don't, whether it shoots like an arrow, whether it doesn't matter, any sort of shechva zera will make you tame. Okay, now the Gemara has another shayla. Bai Rava, Ovid kochavim shehirher v'yarad v'taval mahu. So a non-Jew has an emission. He then decides to convert, goes to the mikvah for conversion, right? And then he comes out of the mikvah and then urinates, which is the same issue we raised before by the Baal Keri. So the question is, what's his status? So the Gemara explains. Imtim salomar basara kiraz linan. If you're going to tell me that we follow the time when the shechva zera was uprooted, so I could argue hamimilu l'chumra. Aval hacha de l'kula lo amrina. Maybe the fact that we follow the initial time when the shechva zera was uprooted, but before it actually came out, should only be true if it's going to lead to a chumra. Here, that's going to be a tremendous kula because the guy wasn't Jewish at the time that the shechva zera was uprooted, so obviously he's not tameh, right? Because tumah shechva zera doesn't apply to a non-Jew. That's one possibility. O dilma lo shana, or maybe no. Maybe we shouldn't distinguish. Maybe we should say that the guy, you know, just because he wasn't Jewish back, you know, at that point, maybe he's still tameh. So the Gemara says teku. The Gemara leaves it as an unresolved question.
It's not the same person anymore. So that tumah that he had when he was a guy doesn't.
Yes, in halacha he's not the same person, but this is a biological
case
question.
What's
what?
The case here? The guy decided to come.
The guy.
Let me enjoy my last.
Well. I don't know. Whatever. He had his admission and then he urinated afterwards. It's the same case as the Baal Keri, basically. Yeah, okay. Just here he went from being not Jewish to Jewish.
So is the point with that there was a carryover is that from the time that the,
right. That yeah, exactly. That's the question.
You need to be in the same status.
Well, sort of. Meaning it's more than that. In the first side of the Gemara, Gemara was saying that if you follow the time when the Shechva Zera was uprooted, that's going to lead to a kula because the guy wasn't Jewish, so he obviously wasn't tameh at that time.
Right.
So that's the Gemara's question. That's what the Gemara's not sure about. Where's the line of demarcation? Do we follow the point of uprooting or the point where it actually comes out? Okay, now the Gemara has a similar shayla. So now, this is a Jewish woman, but she's a Zava, right? So the Zava goes to the mikvah, and then after coming out of the mikvah, in other words, and again, her urine is on the way out, then when she comes out of the mikvah, she actually urinates. So again, the same type of question. So the Gemara says, Imtim salomar basara kiraz linan. So what the Gemara has the same type of question here also. Meaning, on the one hand, you could argue that Shechva Zera is not something which a person can really hold back for that long. urine, you could technically hold in urine for a while. So one could argue that maybe a zava should be different than a balkari, because in the case of the zava, the woman can theoretically hold her urine in for a while, or maybe not. Maybe the Gemara says maybe that's not a factor. Maybe she should be tamei regardless. So that again is the same suffix in the Gemara.
The woman is tamei anyhow. She doesn't have to have an external emission. We say that that's a difference.
Again, she's going to the mikveh after being a zava, and then she has some, and then she urinates, right? So now the question.
You mean the urine has some ziva?
The urine may have some dam ziva. So now the question is, how do we view that, right? So the Gemara says, on the one hand,
urine's not the issue. What
do you say?
No,
in other words, again, she went to the mikvah. She's tahora now. She's done. But now the question is, after she goes to the mikvah, she urinates.
What's the story here? Yeah. She has urine or semen mixed in with her urine?
No. This is not a polenta. That was yesterday's. No.
What's going on
here? She's urinating, right?
That's a problem with urine.
No, because the assumption is that maybe some of the blood got mixed in.
Yeah,
it's blood. You know what you're talking about.
Ziva, come out. She's already taken out before, once it's inside there. Unlike a man.
You're right. That's true. But she went to the mikvah already. She's tahora.
She probably went to the mikvah too early.
No, that's exactly the Gemara's question.
So it shouldn't be a
tekel. This is the suffix in the Gemara.
Why is it a tekel?
No, because on the one hand you could say that there's a difference between shechva. No. That's not the issue. In other words, one possibility is that there's a biological difference, right? Shechva zera, you can't hold back. Urine, you can. So that would be a reason to be mechalik, to say. In other words, we're not talking about at what point does a man or woman become tummy. That was a separate issue. Mm-hmm. Here the question is, is the woman, after she goes to the mikveh, is her tahora process over or not? That's the Gemara's suffix, right? So on the one hand, you could say, this is radically different than shechva zera. Shechva zera, you can't hold back, urine you can. Whereas on the other hand, the Gemara says, okay, so but maybe that's not a factor. Maybe that shouldn't make a difference. That's exactly the Gemara's suffix. That's what the Gemara's not sure about. Okay, and now the Gemara has another very similar type of question. By Rava, Ovedes Kochavim Zava Shenekru Meme Ragla Viyar Devitalna. So again, this is just adding another factor to the case, where instead of the woman being a Zava, she used to be a non-Jewish Zava. She bled, goes to the mikvah, and then urinates. So again, similar type of question. What's the halacha? So Imtim Shalomar Basar Akiraz Linan. If you're going to say that you follow the time when the urine was uprooted, so Afagav Dematzi Naked Luhu, even though you can hold back urine, but Hadi Mila Yisraelis De Temeya De Oraisa. Maybe that's only true for a Jewish woman, where there's a concept of ziva mida oraisa for a Jewish woman. Avalovedes kochavim zava de temeya de rabbanan lo. Whereas the concept of ziva for a non-Jew is only de rabbanan. So maybe the same standard should not apply. Oh, dilma lo shna. Once again, the Gemara says teku. Again, these are all the same types of sfeikos in all of these cases. Okay. Then the Mishnah said umetamin b'choshein. Any amount of shechva zera will make a person tame. So asks the Gemara. Actually, before the question, Amar Shmuel zav tzarech kachas. So comes Shmuel and says that it's not enough to just have a tiny drop of shechva zera. In order for the zav to become tameh, or for the balkari to become tameh, there needs to be a stoppage of the penis. In other words, there has to be enough of an emission to actually block the tip of the penis. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? That's against our Mishnah. The Mishnah said any amount makes the person tameh. Says the Gemara, you're right. Who the amar ke Rabbi Nasan? The Sanya Rabbi Nasan Omer Mishum Rabbi Shmuel zav tzarek hachasimas piha. Rabbi Nassan happened to hold of this shear called blocking the penis, but everyone else disagreed with him. So our Mishnah follows the standard approach that even any amount makes you tame. So asks the Gemara, my time under Rabbi Yishmael, why does Rabbi Yishmael think that you need enough to actually block the penis? So the Gemara says, to Amar Kra, O hechtim b'saro mizovo, because the pasuk at the end of Parshas Metzora says that the flesh was stopped up from Ziva. So that seems to imply that you need enough to actually block it up. V'rabbanan, no, hahumi boile, lach metame, the Eid of Tame Yavish. So Rabbanan interpret that pasuk differently. They say that pasuk teaches me that you only become Tame from a moist emission, not from a dry emission. Rabbi Yishmael, Hahume Rar Nafka. Rabbi Yishmael learns that concept that you only become Tame from a moist emission and not from a dry emission from the word Rar. The word Rar means like flowing. So obviously, if it's flowing, it's obviously a moist emission. The Rabbanan, how did Rabbanan interpret the word Rar? Hahu Limin Yadahudasa. The word Rar teaches me in terms of the number of emissions required. What does that mean? So the Gemara explains, Zovo Chada, Rar Bisaro Trey, Es Zovo Tla. So those are the words of the Pasuk, right? Rar Bisaro, Es Zovo. That teaches me that you need three emissions. For what? Limed Al Zav Baal Shalosh Rios, Shechayev Bekarban. You see that once a man has three emissions, either on the same day or three consecutive days, he is then Chayev a Karban. Then the Gemara says, Oh, Hechtim Bisaro Mi Zovo Tame, Miktas Zovo Tame. So you see that there are cases when even having a partial ziva, so to speak, makes you tamei. Limit alzav val shtei reios shematamei mishkav u'moshav. So a guy who only had two emissions, although he's not chayav a karban, he still will be matamei mishkav u'moshav. If he sits on a chair or lies on a bed, he will make them tamei. The Rabbi Yishmael ben Yada ben Ale. How does Rabbi Yishmael know the concept of this distinction of numbers? Meaning, how does he know that a guy who has three emissions makes a karban and a guy who has two emissions is tamei? How does he know that? So the Gemara says, Nafka lemi de Rabbi Simai. The Sanya, Rabbi Simai Omer. Mana hakos of shtayim mekaru tamei, shalosh mekaru tamei. Haketzad. So the when the pasuk talks about a zav, it mentions the fact that a zav is tamei after two emissions and after three emissions. So which one is it? So the Gemara says shtayim metumah v'shalosh lekarban. So obviously, so the way the Rabbi Yisrael understands this Gemara based on Rabbi Simai is that two emissions makes the guy tamei, three emissions makes him chayav a karban. And the Gemara now says ulamad the nafkal etravay mizos tihiya tu maso bezovo ish ish kihiya zav bimisaromai oved. What about the other opinion that learns both of these halachos, meaning the fact that Zav is tamei, and the fact that he's chayav a karban from the same pasuk, from the pasuk of Zos tihiya tu maso bezovo. How do they interpret the other pasuk that we just darshan before of ish ki yezabi b'saro? How do they darshan that pasuk? So the Gemara says miboyle ad sheyatza mi b'saro. It means it has to actually leave his body in order for him to become tamei. So then the Gemara asks zovo tamei lamali. So what's the pasuk adding when it says that the ziva makes him tamei? Linen al hazov shehu tamei. Not only does the man become tamei, but the ziva itself is metame other things. If the ziva, if the emission itself that touches a kli or whatever it is, will make the kli tame. Amar Rav Chani Lai Mishum Rav Eliezer Barab Shimon. Shichva zera l'roa b'mashihu l'nogeya b'cha adasha. So comes Rav Eliezer, comes Rav Chani Lai, and they draw a distinction between a person who has an emission of shichva zera versus a person who touches shichva zera. Namely, a person who has an emission of shichva zera is tame with even the slightest amount, whereas one who touches shichva zera is only tame if he touches at least the size of a lentil. Asks the Gemara v'ha'anan v'tamen v'chol shehitanan by lav l'nogeya. But the Mishnah said you become tame for any amount. Doesn't that mean if you touch any amount? Lo l'roa, it means if you emit any amount, that you become tamei, but for touching it has to be at least the size of a lentil. So okay, so the Gemara tries again. Tashma chomer b'shichva zera b'sheretz, the chomer b'sheretz b'shichva zera. There are certain chomeras that a sheretz has over shichva zera, and vice versa. Chomer b'sheretz shah sheretz in chaluka tumaso, mashi in kam b'shichva zera. Again, the Gemara is going to clarify what this means in a second. That when it comes to a sheretz, there are no distinctions within the world of tumah for a sheretz, which is not the case by shechva zera, which again we'll explain in a second. Chomer b'shechva zera, shehashechva zera mitame b'cholshu, mashein kei b'sheretz. And the chomer that shechva zera has over a sheretz is that shechva zera is mitame with even the slightest amount, which is not the case by a sheretz. So my lav lino, again, doesn't that mean that even if I touch the slightest amount of shechva zera, I become tame, which is against the Mishnah, which says lola roa. In other words, it means that if you omit the slightest amount of shechva zera, you become tame, but if you touch shichva zera, you're only tamei if it's at least the size of a lentil, like we said before. So asks the Gemara, v'hadumi the sheretz katane. But didn't we teach that the shichva zera is compared to a sheretz? Namely, ma sheretz benegia, av shichva zera benegia. Just as I become tamei for touching a sheretz, I should become tamei for touching shichva zera, and presumably that means that I'm tamei for even the slightest amount. So says the Gemara, no. Amar Rav Adam Rava, shum sheretz katane, v'shum shichva zera katane. Meaning, the two of them are loosely compared to each other in that they're both tamei, but the details of how you become tamei from sheretz and shichva zera are not the same thing. Meaning you can't start comparing and contrasting the specifics, the details of tumah shichva zera, tumah sheretz, one to the other. So now the Gemara asks, v'sheretz lo matame b'mashu? Is that really true that a sheretz will not make you tame if you touch, let's say, even the smallest amount of a sheretz? V'ha'anan t'nah, but the Mishnah says, v'ha'ivarim ein lohem shir pachos mikazayis besar hameis ufachos mikazayis besar nevela ufachos mikadasha ben hasheretz. The Mishnah says that when it comes to limbs of, let's say, either people or animals or shrutzim, there is no shear. What does that mean? So let's say, for example, a person touches less than a kezias of flesh from a dead body, or you touch less than a kezias of the flesh of a dead animal, or you touch less than an adasha, less than a lentil of a sheretz. The Mishnah says in all those cases you become tamei. So don't you see that there is no shear for becoming tamei for a sheretz? So the Gemara says no. Shaini ever tuchule b'mkom adasha kai da ibu chaser porta ever mikam etamia. The Gemara says that the notion of becoming tamei from an entire entire limb of either a person or an animal or a sheretz is in place of the shear of an adasha. In other words, the shear of an adasha of a lentil reflects a certain shear of chashivas. It's a certain amount of chashiv. So a whole limb, even though it may be less than that size, is also chashiv. This is a concept that appears in a number of places in Shas called a beria or a bria. Like for example, the Gemara Mako says, right? If you right, exactly. In other words, if you swallow a whole ant, even if it's less than the size of a kezias, you're still chayav malchus, because even though normally you're only chayav malchus for eating at least a kezias of macholos asuros, but if it's a beria, then it makes it chashiv. So it's kind of the same idea here too. That if the limb is missing a little bit, so then you're not chayav at all because it's lacking the chashiva. So the concept of the shear of the adasha is the same reflection as the idea of a whole limb. Okay, so now the Gemara explains Sheikh Fazera da Chaluka to Masubai. What did the Bryce have mean earlier when it said that Sheikh Fazera, that you know that there are distinctions within the realm of Sheikh Fazera? So Ilema made Israel Lindanachrim, if you're gonna tell me that it means that there are distinctions between Jews and non-Jews, so that's a terrible comparison because Hachanabi Ika Akbar Diyava Akbar Diyabasha. That would mean that there are also distinctions within the realm of Shrutzim. Not all Shrutzim are Matame. Namely, a regular land mouse is Matame, but a sea mouse, whatever that is not Matame. So the fact that there are distinctions within the realm of Sheikh Fazera is not exclusive to Sheikh Fazera. It should also apply to Sheretz, where earlier we said that those distinctions only apply to Sheikh Fazera. So the verse says, you're right, Elam in Katan and Gadol. The distinction that we referred to was between a Katan and a Gadol, meaning if a Katan has an emission, he's not Tame, whereas if a Katan touches a Sheretz, he does become Tame. That's the point of demarcation.
Why
is it Katan? If we're having an emission, that's halacha. That's a din. Only a gadol becomes tummy for an emission, whereas when it comes to tumas sheretz, then even a katan becomes tummy. So the Gemara explains, Amar of Papa, Kitanoi. It's like the following.
Well, if cotton touches the sheretz,
he's tummy, yeah.
But not
for Sheikh Fazer. Not for Sheikh Fazer, correct. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Amar Papa Kitanai Minai Laramos Nogeya B'Sheikh Vazera." How do I know to include a person who touches Sheikh Vazera as becoming Tamei? Tamed Lomar Oish. Right, the pasuk says Oish Asher Teitzei Menu Sheikh Vazera. So that pasuk, the context of that pasuk is talking about a man who has an emission. But the extra words Oish are including even a person who simply touches Sheikh Vazera also becomes Tamei. And the Gemara says, "Upliye Tanoi Ba'alma." This is a general Machlokes Tanoi.
They say East that it would absolve a katan.
We already said that katan is exempted from tumas sheikh vazera. That's what we're talking about now. You're right. This pasuk was the proof from the context of sheretz that a katan is tame.
How old is the katan?
Doesn't specify.
I think that when they say
again, we're talking about sheretz versus two different things. Well, right. Presumably, the katan would have to be over 9 years old, where he's right. He's right. Libya. Presumably, yeah. Yeah.
So
now, yeah.
That East means not 9 years old, but 13 years old.
Well, that's true. There are other examples in Shas where the word ish, depending on context, can actually mean, like for example, in the case of a Ben Sora and Mora, where Sanhedrin says that the word ish actually means from 9 years old. In other words, in terms of being Mazria, because that's the age of where the boy is Roy Libya. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Uplige Tanoi Ba'ama." This is a general Machlokas Tanoim. This is a very famous, important, and a slightly complicated machlokes that appears primarily in Masechet Baba Kama, but it comes up in a few other places in Shas also, which basically is a question: how do you interpret halacha? How do you understand? How do you derive one halacha from another? So there are two varying methods you can do that. One is called don't be nomina. Don't be nomina, if you want to think about it in very simple terms, is basically like copy and paste. It's like you have two halachos, you're trying to derive B from A, so all the properties, all the halachos that apply to A, I'm just going to stick them onto B regardless of context. It could be Sheikh Mazera and Sheretz, two totally different things. It doesn't matter. I take halachos of A, I stick them onto B. That's called don't be nomina. However, the other possibility, which seems more logical, is called don't be nomina v'oke ba'asra, which means that you have to contextually adapt the properties. In other words, that let's say in general I'm going to compare sheretz to Sheikh Vazera, but I can't just stick all the halachas of sheretz to Sheikh Vazera because they're two different halachas. I have to figure out how they adapt to that halacha. So those are the two possibilities of the Gemara. So the Gemara explains, so if you take the first approach, then you're just going to stick all the halachas from A onto B, so then you would say the following: Ma sheretz b'negia, av Sheikh Vazera b'negia, u'mina. Ma sheretz b'chadasha, av Sheikh Vazera b'chadasha. Meaning they're exactly identical. In other words, according to this approach, namely, just as I'm tamei for touching a lentil size of a sheretz, so to Abtame for touching a lentil size of Sheikh Vazera. So that's the first approach. However,
what gives you the right to equate to. I mean, I couldn't equate Sheretz with Shabbos.
No, but there are Hekeshim already in the Pesukim that equate the two. Okay. The question is, how do you interpret those links? That's correct. Yeah, correct. There has to be some connection, right? Okay, so what about the second approach? So even though that point of comparison is the same, where you become tummy for touching both the sheretz and shechlasera, but they're slightly different. But okay, ba'asra. Just as in the case of shechlasera, we said that you become tummy when you emit any amount. So this actually turns into a chumrah for shechlasera, where you also become tummy for touching any amount. Meaning the nafkamina between these two approaches is that according to the first approach of don mina mina, you only become tummy for touching at least a lentil size of shechlasera. Whereas according to the second approach, you become tummy for touching even the slightest amount of sheikh mazar. So that's the difference. So Amar le Rav Huna b'rei de Rav Nasa le Rav Papa, mimai de mei o'ish desheretz komar bilei, dilma mei o'ish asher teitzei mevenu sheikh mazar komar bilei. Why are we using the word o'ish in the context of a sheretz to teach me the halacha of sheikh mazar? The words o'ish are also written in the context of sheikh mazar itself. And therefore, the Gemara says, "Uduchulei alma don't mina mina." In which case, everyone would agree that you have to just stick the halacha so from one to the other. Meaning, if you're trying to learn a halacha from one area to the other, but the two psukim are the same thing, they're both talking about shech mazera. One's talking about touching, one's talking about having an emission. So then, everyone agrees that the halachas are exactly identical. So in other words, the Gemara is basically asking, why are we fishing in Hilchos Sheretz to find the words oish when the words are written right here by shech mazera itself, and then everyone would agree that you become tamei only by touching an adash. Only by touching a lentil size. So the Gemara says, "Shailinu l'tanai, ika d'tanik rapapa, v'ika d'tanik rafuna b'rei d'ravda." So the Gemara says, "You're right. There were different versions of which of these drashos was actually correct." Okay, and the Mishnah, "Tinokes bas yom echad b'tama benida." In theory, a one-day-old girl who bleeds, even though it's highly unlikely, can become a nida. And the Mishnah says, "Bas yud yamim b'tama beziva." And once she's 10 days old, because again, assuming that she bled, she had 7 days, and then she bled for 3 days after that, she can become a zava. Tinok ben yomecha metame b'ziva, a one-day-old boy can become a zava. Umetame ben agayim, he can become tame with saras. Umetame b'tmeimes, right, if he dies, he's tame lemes. V'zokik liyibum, upoter ben hayibum. Now, what does that mean? So zokik liyibum means he can now be connected to his sister-in-law. If his brother died, he is now bound to his sister-in-law for yibum, or chalitza. And he can exempt his mother from having to do yibum, because we know, of course, that yibum does not apply if there's a child, right? So if he's born, then his mother is now off the hook from doing yibum. Right?
No, that's not true. He's not 30 days old yet.
The assumption is that unless you know otherwise, the baby is going to be considered viable unless you have reason to suspect otherwise. Even if the baby dies afterwards, unless the baby was what was an Edo Ben Kayama, if the baby wasn't viable at all, then the mother would still be Kayamas to do Yibam or Chalitza. But here, if the baby, if the baby was born alive, then it exempts the mother from Yibam. Yeah. Okay? Then the Mishnah says, Umachil Betruma Uposel Ben Atruma. Also, these are two different halachas. So the baby can allow the mother to eat Truma. For example, let's say the mother was a non-Kohen. She marries a Kohen, then her husband dies, but she had a baby. The fact that she has a baby who's a Kohen can enable her to continue eating Truma. And the opposite is also true. Let's say she's a Bas Kohen who married a non-Kohen and then had a kid. So even if her husband dies, the fact that she has a kid now who's not a Kohen is going to prevent her from eating Truma. Also, this baby can inherit if his parents die, and he can be machil. If the baby dies, then his brothers will inherit him. If you kill the baby, you're chayav, because he's considered a human being. He's like a full-fledged chasan, which is just an expression to say that people are going to mourn his loss as if he was a chasan. Okay, stop here.